This is Think Inclusive. I'm Tim Villegas. Wow, we are very nearly finished with season 12 of Think Inclusive, MCIE's podcast that brings you conversations with people doing the work of inclusion in the real world. It's wild to me that I have been doing this podcast for, 13 years. And it's a privilege. So I just want to say thank you for everyone who tunes in week after week. And I really, really appreciate it. So we have a fantastic show for you today. Two wonderful guests, Dr. Leah Kelly and Dr. Kari Gustafson. Dr. Leah Kelly is a neurodivergent education consultant, author, activist, educator, and parent. She is currently working with families, community organizations, school districts, and university classes, among other things. After 25 years of experience as a public school teacher, including as a primary teacher, an inclusion resource teacher, and an SEL mental health helping teacher. Leah has presented nationally and internationally on topics such as neurodiversity, advocacy, and inclusion, and also authors the popular blog 30 Days of Autism. She is a sought-after speaker, captivating audiences with her storytelling, practical wisdom, and relational approach, which is also reflected in her book, The Person Who Arrives, Connecting Disability Studies to Educational Practice for Teachers, Parents, and Others. It's a wonderful book. You should go ahead and get it. It's on my I can see it right now. It is on my shelf right now. Dr. Kari Gustafson is an instructor, researcher, role-playing gamer, and parent working in the crossroads of neurodiversity and disability studies, education, and role-playing games. Kari has a PhD in philosophy of education from Simon Fraser University, where their dissertation focused on D&D, relationality, and inclusion, and how we might welcome students for their strengths and collaborate and work together. Kari is a faculty member in the Disability and Community Studies program at Douglas College. In today's episode, Leah, Kari, and I talk about play. And we meander around a little bit this idea of play, but as it relates to disability, and I think as it relates to just life in general and how it benefits humans as, you know, living our lives. It's a fascinating discussion. I think you're going to love it. I don't want to give too much away, but if you like rambling and meandering conversations, you are going to love this episode. Now, before we get into my conversation with Leah and Kari, I want to tell you about our sponsor for this season, IXL. IXL is a fantastic all-in-one platform designed for K-12 education. It helps boost student achievement, empowers teachers, and tracks progress seamlessly. Imagine having a tool that simplifies what usually requires dozens of different resources. Well, that's IXL. As students practice, IXL adapts to their individual needs, ensuring they're both supported and challenged. Plus, each learner receives a personalized learning plan to effectively address any knowledge gaps. Interested in learning more? Visit IXL.com/inclusive. That's IXL.com/inclusive. All right, after a short break, we'll get into my conversation with Dr. Leah Kelly and Dr. Kari Gustafson. Catch you on the other side. drinking? Does everyone have drinking tea, water, coffee?
I'm actually on water, which is very unlike me, but...
Okay. All right. Leah, what are you drinking?
I already had like a giant glass of water. Now I'm drinking coffee as my reward.
Ah, okay. Okay. I have also drank my water. So mm-hmm. I have my water. So the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then now I am drinking Yorkshire Gold tea.
Oh, nice.
So it's just black tea. Yep.
Yeah, my empty coffee cup is here. So this is the record of the second cup that size I've had today. So I decided water was the way to go.
I have to hydrate because I'm racing
tomorrow. Oh.
You're racing?
Outrigger racing.
Oh, tell me about that. I didn't know you did that.
Oh, yeah. A dragon boat race and outrigger race.
What's a dragon boat?
It's a... Really?
I don't know what that is. I don't know what a dragon boat is.
It's a big boat that sits people two to a side. Uh-huh. And there's huge races that holds like 22 people. If you count the steers and the person up front calling, you should Google dragon boat races. Yeah. I mean, if you want, they're pretty exciting. Everyone has to paddle like in
paddle sync, and sink,
or you would whack people's paddles. And really? There's races all over the world. Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Outrigger races they're like a very narrow, I do OC6, which is the Outrigger Canoe 6, a very narrow canoe that seats six people. And then there's a float on the side called an OMA, and that's so you don't tip as very tip, or you don't tip as easily. And do you remember Hawaii 5-0?
Yeah, I remember that.
The opening credits, da-da-da-da-da-da, you see one of those boats curling in the waves?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay, if you recall. Anyways, I'm trying to help you hook into your previous knowledge.
That is an outrigger?
Yeah.
Okay, I get it. Interesting. Wow. Mm-hmm. Ikari, do you do this as well?
I've tried it once and it was amazing. And I have plans to come start a bit, but not yet. I'm waiting for the weather to get better. I think you have to be committed to do it in this weather.
I don't know if I'd call it a fear, but I'm terrified of canoes, kayaks.
Oh, okay.
Kayaks. There's this story my wife likes to tell, that we went camping, and there was this lake, and all these families are there, and the family rented a kayak, and so the idea was like, okay, we're gonna use the kayak, and then okay, Tim, you can now it's your turn, you can do the kayak, and I'm already like, I don't know if I'm gonna like this, and so. No one was there with me. Everyone had gone off to do other things. It was like my turn to do the kayak. And I went down to the boat ramp and I'm getting in the kayak and I immediately like
flip
yes. over. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I could not for the life of me stay up in the kayak. And I was so mad that I started to say really naughty words. And I don't know how many times this happened, but the last time before I got out, I looked up and there was a family of the parents and then the children just staring at me.
Parents are covering the kids' ears.
And I'm like, forget it. I'm done. And then I left.
Never again.
Yeah. And so, yeah. It's something I probably should
You should do it with a guide or something. Because if you get in wrong, they're super slippery and they just kind of like, whoop.
Yeah.
But I haven't done it a lot of times, but it's you're always a little on the edge until you have that sense of.
Okay. So all of that sounds wonderful, but it is like raising my anxiety just a little bit. But I am really excited to hear that's something you're doing tomorrow.
Well, and I'm not that excited about it because it's going to be cool. So I'm kind of like proud of myself. It's probably the only thing in my life that makes me feel like I'm a bit of a badass. But I'm
sure there's other things.
No, this really does make me go, wow, look what you just did.
Okay.
Yeah, we did a 29K race in Hawaii in September on the
open. Oh my gosh. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So you are a badass.
Or ridiculous. I don't know.
Or ridiculous. Well, Kari
Gustafson.
Gustafson. I'm going to say that again. Kari Gustafson, Leah Kelly, welcome to the Think Inclusive podcast.
Thank you so much.
Yay. Yeah.
Thank you for having us. We're big fans of you.
Yes.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate that. This is a privilege to do this. It's like my dream job, basically. And so, Kari, Leah, we know each other. I don't always throw a curveball at the very beginning of a interview, but since I know both of you, I thought that we would start off. You saw the questions, right?
Yes.
Okay. I was like, oh gosh, that'd be a really big curveball. I wanted to start with a little thought experiment because we live in interesting times. They become more and more interesting every day, it feels like. And so I wanted to, since we're going to be talking about play and creativity, I thought that this would be a fun way to start. So I want everyone to imagine that there's two timelines, right? So one timeline, what we would consider the best case scenario for the next 6 months or whatever. And then another timeline where we would say the worst case scenario. And so I'd like for us to kind of play around with this idea of how we view our reality, our world, and projecting and bringing into our mind what the best would be, and then also like staring the worst in its face. So what do you think about that? And do you want me to go first?
I vote you go first.
Yeah.
I'm like, you catch your own curveball for.
Yeah, I'll catch my own curveball. Yeah, and I really haven't thought about it. You know, like I wanted to kind of be fresh about this. So this is a creative endeavor. So let's start with worst. So let's start with worst. And I'm going to follow my own directions here. Well, I live in the United States. We have a new administration, and my job in particular is working for a nonprofit and in communications around inclusion, inclusive education, equity. And so my worst case scenario is that what's happening right now in our administration to quote unquote root out all of this radical indoctrination, not my words, their words, in public schools and in federal and state programs, that we're going to see a lot of suppression of what we as inclusion advocates have been fighting for many, many years and decades. And I've never lived in a time where this feels like likely to happen up until now. So if I project out 6 months, I'm imagining that the Department of Education might be either gutted or completely removed, because who knows what Congress will do at this point. I'm imagining that states will start to receive money without any strings attached, and they can decide on what they want to spend their money on. And some states won't want to spend money on educating or supporting learners with disabilities. I'm imagining people being afraid to speak up about inclusion and equity. And so those are all of like my worst case scenarios. Okay, so best case scenario.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Scenario. What I'm hoping and what I am trying to attract, right? I'm going to try to attract this positivity, and is that people like us who are interested and are advocates of inclusion and equity, that we will not stay silent and that we will speak up and not be afraid to pursue what we've been pursuing for many, many years, that we will continue to advocate and continue to bring to light the stories of people with disabilities and inclusive education, welcoming and nurturing schools, neurodiversity affirming spaces, and that we can at least slow down the onslaught against diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so if I'm projecting the best case scenario out in 6 months, that we will continue to be doing our work and that people will be supportive and that it may not be completely perfect, but we will continue to work without too much damage being done. There. That felt good to say.
Yeah.
So I, from a perspective in Canada, well, okay, so I'm an American who lives in Canada and has recently gotten PR, permanent residence in Canada. So I feel like I'm both.
Okay.
From that perspective, I have learned through my time living in Canada that there sometimes are groups that feel really inspired in Canada by developments in the U.S. and not always in a great way from my perspective. So I would say maybe worst case scenario for me would be that the sort of movements that are happening in the world that are so illiberal and hostile to inclusion and to human rights and these sort of things also for some reason looks attractive or more attractive, and that movement would grow in Canada as well, because that's, I don't think, outside of the realm of possibility. And worst case scenario for folks in the US, I'm scared actually for a lot of the people living there. And I think that this, like, the, I guess, movement toward away from inclusive spaces and acceptance and that sort of thing is such a detriment to society as a whole. And of course, also, especially to the people who are the targets of that, right? Who find themselves the ones being excluded. Best case scenario, I think same thing, that people continue to feel that they can or they need to speak up, and they will, and they do, and they keep working towards this. I would say, though, I'm also troubled by how polarized things are and how there's not going to be any, I don't think, like, meaningful movement in a good direction until that there's less of that feeling, right? So I think a best case scenario for me would be what you're talking about, with the addition of that people really, think about what it is they're actually promoting when they're against DEI. Those are my air quotes going there.
Right.
Because I think that a lot of people are actually in favor of, and historically it seems that way, are in favor of building more inclusive societies and supporting folks with disabilities and other marginalized people. And I want us to remember that and maybe, you know, work more together towards that goal. That would be, I guess, my best case. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for that. All right, Leah.
Okay. Well, yeah. Honestly, at this time, I'm not sure even how to address it. And to clarify, as Kari said, we're both in Canada, but not unconcerned about, I don't know what to call it, friends, attacks, oppression, and the threat to and human rights, and things that have been so hard won for decades and decades and decades. And I see people who've done this work and who I've worked alongside, whom I've worked alongside, feeling demoralized in school. And I guess I see a lot of wondering. I read things and then I'm careful about what I'm reading and then I'm like, okay. But how much is designed to just demoralize? We don't fight a battle we think we've already won. And I say we, I am so connected to friends and both in the United States and in other parts of the world are affected by these kind of ideas and thoughts and values or a lack of values. And so I think worst case scenario is that we don't do something. And even if it's a small thing that you can do at the local level right now, I'm really committed to a really horrible anti-inclusion, anti-acceptance person on our local school board actually put their hat in to be a provincial candidate. And so they won that election. Now there's a space open on the school board. And I'm really working at the local level to help that be, help someone be elected who I think is a really good advocate and a trustee for
public education. Yeah.
And in terms of disability and how those, like, the changes intersect with other identities and experiences of oppression. And then, I guess, best case scenario, I mean, that links into talking about our podcast. In a way, talking about play could almost seem like it's frivolous in contrast to such horrific slide to the right and the way the Overton window is shifting and moving and the experiences of people, like the trauma that I think is being inflicted and the oppression and the fear. So talking about play might feel frivolous, but then on the other hand, I think it might be more important than ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
To go, what is it that we value? What can we create? What can we do? Mm-hmm. Whether it's on a local level politically or some other action you can do that's working to support things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for that. Yeah, I just didn't feel like I want to talk about it with people. I mean, even though this isn't going to be published until quite a bit later, it's still something that's on my mind constantly. So I don't know if that exercise was beneficial or not. I think it was beneficial to me, but thank you.
I think it is. And thanks especially for reminding us to think about what the best case scenario would be, right? Because I think it's really easy to focus on those worst case scenarios that seem to be coming to fruition and remember that there are ways to work towards other options, right? Other scenarios.
All right. Well, let's move on to talking about the podcast project. So who would like to go first and share how this came to be?
Do you want to go ahead and start, Leah?
Sure. Tim, you put a call out saying, who wants to do a narrative podcast? And I was like, me. And then I was like, well, it'd be way more fun to do this. Right? So you were super generous in saying, I want to produce this. I hope I'm not letting anything out. I'll do all the in behind stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm so in. I love storytelling. I love the idea of doing this. I want to talk about disability and I want to do a podcast. And then my awesome friend, Aria, like, hey, well, I asked you first, hey, could we do it with someone else? And you were like, bring it. And and so then I did a party and then the three of us started talking and we were like, oh yeah, this is a thing that would be amazing. And then we started learning more about like, what is a narrative podcast? How do we do this? Do we need, you know, we need a story. So we're really in the beginning of it. Still, we've been doing it for quite a while and we've been talking to people and doing some really amazing interviews. And then we've decided on like a theme for our first season. So yeah, we're even thinking multiple seasons. So I'm excited. That's sort of how it came about. Kari, why don't you jump in and add?
Yeah, sure. So I'm kind of obsessed with podcasting actually. So I was super excited to be asked. I listened to embarrassingly many of them. And I hosted the grad student podcast, Ideas podcast at SFU for a while. So I have played around a little bit. So apropos play. So that was really exciting to be part of this project. And I think both of you are doing amazing work and things. And disability is my favorite topic in the world. So all in all, it was like my favorite things. So how could I say no? Yeah. So I think that we're, you know, things are emerging from the interviews we've done. And the theme of play definitely emerged from our playing with ideas as we were getting started and things. Yeah. So that's, I don't know, where are we at? We've done some interviews. We're getting, things are taking shape. And I think for me anyway, it's also made me think more about play, which is surprising because I already think a lot about play, but it has sort of sparked new ideas and made me think about things in new ways, I think.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about play now a lot and what is play. And I think we're actually playing with podcasting. Mm-hmm. Like this process is emergent, it's explorative, it's creative, it's got our imaginations going, we're doing wordplay, we're playing with ideas, we're toying around. I love the idea of playfulness and toying with things and what is it to be toying and just even thinking about what's this for, who are we doing this for, why are we doing it? And the big ideas and the big questions behind that. And you may have noticed, but Kari and I have no problem with coming up with intersections and things to talk about. Probably the challenge is we have like too many things we have in common, so it's easy to go off on tangent. Be talking about things that, yeah.
And I think the other thing is that it really appealed, like we have a lot of sort of life experiences in common or that have resonances as well. And I think maybe, at least from my perspective, the reason this is an interesting idea, particularly for the first season, is as a parent of a child, a neurodivergent child, that I really experienced that. And I think, Leah, we've talked about this, that play is not necessarily what is recommended as the most important thing for your child. That all of a sudden play is like you're sort of pressured as a parent to substitute playtime for like therapy time or that sort of thing. So the things that kids do in childhood is in play is actually sort of not a priority or not as much of a priority. And it's, you know, good parenting is seen as parenting where you're limiting that time and doing something else that's more, you know, important and straightforward and structured. And that's problematic. So I think that's...
I think parents and educators feel that across the board that play is like the thing you earn when you're done with it, or it's extra, it's an extra thing. But I think, and I'm relating to what you were just saying, Kari, that when you add disability, and I'm also a parent of an adult son who is multiply neurodivergent and otherwise disabled, and I'll say I identify the same way as well, and that play partners can be replaced. There's a danger that play is replaced by an adult in oh, we're having fun, I'm using air quotes, or this therapy, they're enjoying it. That's not play. You know, if it's adult-led, it's not play. If it's goal-focused, I mean, like a group of kids can have a goal, like we're going to capture that flag or find the treasure or do whatever. But there's buy-in. It's not adult-led. And, you know, or let's pretend that I'm your dragon or whatever it is. And I think there's a danger of conflating having a good time with actually playing.
Yeah.
Or an okay time. And I think when we talk about disability and the messages educators and parents can sometimes be given about disability, that it's something that has to be fixed, cured, ameliorated, lessened, intervened with, that can rob time for play.
Yeah.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Something that I've been thinking about in my own life about, finding joy in things and being very intentional about finding things that make me feel at ease, joyful, happy, peaceful, stuff like that. And especially kind of at the beginning of thinking this way, it felt like what you were talking about, Kari, this, you're not supposed to be focused on that. But the more that you invest in yourself and in finding joy and having more joy, like the happier you are, and then you are able to do all the other stuff. And so it's like with play and I love what you said, Leah, about it not being adult focused, because when you have an adult being like, okay, this is what you're supposed to do, instead of following the lead of the person, it's just that like whole self-acceptance thing. And it's could it really be that simple? Like I think about this, is it really that simple? Like, just the more that you accept yourself and you become like who you actually are, the happier you are, and then the more your life is fulfilling. Like, is it really that simple? I don't know. These are the questions that are on my head.
Well, maybe the more resources you have to do some of the other hard work we need to be doing right now.
Yeah.
Maybe it's restorative for us as adults. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we are positioned to protect children.
Yeah.
Who have the time and space to be able to play.
Yeah.
But I think also it goes beyond that. And that's kind of, I think, part of what we're doing with the podcast and with thinking about play, is that there's the element of, like, I guess, yes, relaxation and joy and, energy givingness, which is really important. But there's also this other element to play, which is exploration of ideas and developing. It's very transformational, and it's not always easy and pleasurable, right? And there's that is true throughout the lifespan. I know that. So role playing games is really one of my big foci. One of my foci. There we go. That's more than one focus. And right. Role playing games are used for all sorts of really intense and important learning. There's people that have done role-playing games about exploring Palestinian resistance and, state building, or, thinking about, or like conflict resolution, et cetera, in intense conflict areas or conflict situations. There's people that run like, what's the word that is gone right now? It's like role-playing for like scenarios, right? Mm-hmm. For thinking about like how to deal with it. big world disasters, right? And so, but the I think what's important about it is that it's in this space of like your things aren't decided, and you can still go in all these different directions, maybe, so that like it's still play, but it also has this other element. So I think that like play can do so many things.
That is really interesting. Yes. So like for really complex situations, having that kind of being in the sandbox, right? And just like, just figuring it out, where the stakes are lower because it's not quote unquote real. But if everyone's invested, there could be a lot of learning that could happen and transformation. That's really interesting.
But that's true for children as well. Like developmentally, they can play through difficult situations and conflict and resolving things or trying on what it would be like to be this or to and have these experiences that are very important. And but in a relatively safe way again.
Right.
So and children work through things in play. They work through experiences. They replay maybe an experience they've seen in real life, and that can be really helpful too. Because they're going through something in a way that's safe. Yeah, but there's a lot, and negotiating conflicts, like into learning how to resolve conflicts without an adult at the helm, and what happens when I do this, and what happens when I do that.
Yeah,
like how do I get through this? How do I work through this? And maintain relationships, or what does that even look like and feel like? So it's beyond just joy and fun.
Yeah.
The opportunity to be like in the sandbox, whether it's like a board game or a role playing game or pretend imaginative play with others. Yeah.
But also interestingly, even those sort of intense developmental and learning aspects of play, I think also do produce joy and energy, right? Like you come away from experiences like that just being, you know, your energy is also transformed in a way.
Do you ever do like escape rooms?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Leah?
Yeah.
Escape rooms?
I haven't. Some of them are really ableist, so I have.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Tell me more about that. Yeah, tell me more.
I've seen like Escape the Asylum kind of things. But it hasn't, I think I did it once, maybe. I can't remember, but it wasn't. There's a sort of tenseness, a time element to it that I don't really like as much.
I think I've only done a couple, but most recently over the holidays, we got like a Groupon. You know, I don't know if you have Groupon in Canada, but that was like a special discount. We went and it was a group of us. And then there was two other people because they had to fill the group. So I think there was 8 people in this escape room. And the task was that you were kind of like a spy, like a secret agent spy person who had to break into this this crooked villain's an art dealer, and he was nefarious, and you had to like steal something and then like get out before like his goons got you or something like that. So anyways, I didn't know that I would like it as much as I did because it's so cooperative. Mm-hmm. And I think that if I'm doing like a puzzle, that type of thing where it's just me, I feel pretty overwhelmed. Like I just don't feel like I have the resources to do this thing, but I could contribute like my little portion of it. Like maybe I figured out where to point this one thing and something opened up, and then another person figured out the code with the letters and the numbers, and they matched it up, and that revealed something else. So it was actually really, really fun, and I'm looking forward to doing another one. But I didn't really know that until I did it. And so I just feel like there's some benefit to going in, like where there's some risk involved, and you're like, I don't know if I'm going to like this, but I ended up liking it. But to your point, Leah, like, I definitely see how there could be some tropes there that that aren't so great.
You should join. We, Kari, you should start like a D&D group, and we can play virtually. You might like that.
Yeah, for sure.
I definitely want to.
An invite might be coming your way.
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
That's like deeply, deeply collaborative. Like that's about, yeah. That's what's so fun about it. Or so great about it, I guess. Yeah.
We could use it as part of our podcast. Like D&D Tim.
Yeah, that could be in like an episode or like you could pull some audio from that. Yeah.
Yeah, we should.
We are burning through our time here.
Yes.
but I want to know if you've already done some interviews and you've already thought through, you know, what this storytelling is going to sound like. Are there some stories that you have that really exemplify what it means, like all of this intersection of disability, creative, joy, play, all that stuff? Mm-hmm. Is there something on top of mind that you could share?
It's not from one of the interviews, but my scholarship interest it sort of comes from this, from a story about play. And that is that my kids were in a live action role playing group, a LARP group for kids when we lived in Denmark. And it was just a bunch of 8 to 13-year-olds running around the forest with foam swords and, you know, on Sunday afternoons. It was awesome. And I got to, you know, as being an adult there who was hanging around, they got sometimes would let me dress up in a monster costume and be the monster or whatever. So that was pretty fun too. But, and then talking to the other parents that also would stick around, parents and caregivers, there was a really large percentage of the kids in the group who were neurodivergent or had other like mental health or social challenges, lots of things, kids that had had a lot of trouble, a lot of being part of things in, the context that kids are often in, had been excluded and marginalized and all these sort of things. And that was not the case in this particular group, right? So it was all these kids that were so different and diverse and were able to be together and play, and people weren't being excluded. And I don't think I ever saw anybody crying, even though like they were hitting each other with foam swords. And I thought, what is it that is happening here in this magic space with whatever 20-year-olds in orc costumes who are running the show? That what is it that is doing that is so hard to capture in a classroom or a sports team or some of these other contexts where you hear from people that it wasn't that way, or you maybe observe it wasn't that way. So that's where I first got interested in play and that type of game structure and the collaborativeness and stuff, and what it was that was able to be so inclusive, or that at least supported an inclusive context. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you said that you did some of your research around that. Is that right?
Yeah, that was when I was like, okay, I need to know more about this. So that was when I applied for PhD programs. And actually that's what I studied then, was role-playing games. I played a lot of D&D and other tabletop games, and then explored how, like, what are the elements of sort of inclusive spaces that emerge through those games.
Are there like one or two like takeaways that, you know, from your research? One?
Yes, there are.
Yes. Leah is emphatically pointing.
They're called role-playing games, which is interesting because they're not really a game. They're actually a collaborative storytelling practice. It really is closer to what they are. So all the people in the game are playing a different character. And then there's the story master or the game master who's sort of like the lead storyteller. But the mechanics are such that it only really works if there's a lot of different types of characters. So I also, as part of this game master, a game for some middle schoolers, for example. So, and the first thing everyone wants to do, especially if you're in middle school, is create like the most overpowered character, right? Everyone wants to be like the whatever fighter, because we are used to thinking of the world in sort of terms of like action heroes, right? Who are like individual types, but it takes collaboration and it takes all the different types of players to win over the game, right? So it's sort of like this forced inclusive space, right? And it becomes very obvious that all of those different types are needed. But that's one place, right, where you are really just seeing that it's only a strength if there's a difference, right?
Yeah.
Involved. Yeah. And then it also, like, the dice are being used to determine whether, and when you try something in the story, if it works or it doesn't work, right? So it's not actually your own individual abilities that are going to do this, but it's the dice roll. And it really brings home this idea that, you know, the person who's like the big, powerful, whatever fighter type can also roll a one. Something's going to happen and they can completely fail, right?
Yeah.
Whatever they were trying to do. Whereas the person who isn't that type might roll the highest roll and then things happen in the world. And either it's our success and failure isn't necessarily inside of us, but it is related to these other things in the world. And it gives you the opportunity, like every time you quote unquote fail, I'm using lots of air quotes here, it gives you just an opportunity to try again and try something a different way and be together in a different way and stuff. So there's all, that's just the beginning. I won't just keep on. So
everything you're saying is, it really is just so beautiful. It's like, yeah, amazing. Wow.
It is actually, I'm like a giant like fan of Kari.
Of role playing games.
Just of Kari.
And like in a nutshell, the idea of role playing games and the inclusivity that's created by valuing the strengths of each person.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Participant and not like saying, yeah, but you can't use that because you haven't mastered this other. You can't wield a giant axe, so you have no. So we will spend all of your time now training you, even though you're as small as a mouse, to wield a giant axe,
right?
Whatever, that everyone has value and can contribute. And that those ideas are actually a beautiful model for looking at inclusion in our classrooms. Like, how do we build that? Yes. And that kind of valuing of everybody, that same ethic in our world, in our classrooms, in our homes, and in our communities. So that's me. I'm the summarizer.
It is great.
I can't get off track. So that's
well, I get off track with my own stuff, but with you, I'm like, I got this.
That's why you make a good team, right?
Yes. Well, we can summarize for one another.
Yeah, I know. We just carry a tiny version of each other in our pocket for the elevator talk. Here, this is the script. I might have to make you a tiny me in one of those little Altoids containers, and you can just pop it out and say, here's what my work is, and then you can do the same.
We should get Isla to crochet us one.
A little frizzy-haired person in an Altoids, and you'll open it up, and on the inside panel, it'll just see a script saying what your work is all about.
There you go. Yes. I think that's a good idea.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. What were you talking about? What was that last question? It was a good, your work and how it's related. Yeah.
It's stories. We're telling stories.
Oh, all right.
Do you have a story?
Maybe my story is an idea for the future. I was Altoid. Leah in an Altoid can. And a little Kari in an Altoid. No, seriously, though, I love to play. I love to be ridiculous. I love wordplay. My paddling is play. Mm-hmm. I love trying things I am crappy at. And in a way, that's play. I'm involved with SCA, which is a Society of Creative Anachronism, the medieval society. And I'm sewing garb for that. And Well, when I started paddling, I was horrible at paddling. I don't even know why they wanted to keep me. I think I'm coachable and I'm enthusiastic. That was pretty much all I had. And my range of motion was so bad when I started that I could barely check my blind spot in my car. Right when I was driving. Now I'm like, I want it to be a star of The Exorcist, my range of
motion. Like an owl.
Yeah, like an owl. Not quite, but... And I'm an activist at heart. I am politically active. I believe we have an obligation to leverage our privilege or mobilize our privilege to make the world better for everyone. And I'm sustained by being a goof, like to being ridiculous, being playful. I want to pretend. I want to doodle. I want to become the bardic champion of my shire. I want to tell stories. I want to make people laugh. And really, I want to live the life that as a child I thought adulthood would be. That's been my mantra of late.
Oh, wow. That's good. That is good.
What is, and as a child, I thought the world would be at peace by now. That's included. But I'm also going through life with a checklist. Would I be in the medieval society? Check. Yes, of course I would be. I mean, I didn't maybe know about it when I was a kid, but when I was a child, pretty much every sentence started with, let's pretend that. Or let's pretend, and we were out in the woods all day long, every day. Like, my family, Kari and I have done a bit of talking and recording bits about what play was like when we were kids. And both of us were in the woods all the time. I came home to, like, maybe eat something if you couldn't find something in the woods to eat. But we weren't scheduled. Like, we had school, and then we had hanging out outside or playing in wherever. We just played. I was probably because my mom and dad couldn't afford it, but I also think they didn't believe in it. We were allowed to eat in one thing.
Yeah.
Oh, like one activity?
Yes. Yeah, we talked a lot about the over-programming that kids are sort of subject to in the name of, like, making sure that they get everything they need to get when, I don't know, I guess our thought is that what they probably need to get is having some free time and being allowed to play.
And then, of course,
And then, of course, with disabilities, you have even more programming that you need to get through, right?
Because
there's also therapy on top of that, right?
Mm-hmm. And I wrote about that in my book, The Pressure for Parents when you're talking about having a child who is disabled or a disabled child, whichever way you prefer to say it, that the pressure to intervene, to provide therapies, and that if you love your child, you will do this, really conflates love with their, and that robs children of the time to go and to build relationships and just interact and have fun. So,
and to be themselves.
And to find pride in being themselves and to find their strength so that they might not be wielding the axe. They might have the power to change into the mouse and be invisible and get through that lock to save the whole group.
Well, I mean, school and therapies both kind of do this thing where the bulk of the time is spent doing the things you're bad at, right? You have to, like, repeat those until, you know, so much. And you end up then, the more you do that, the less time you get to do the things you're good at or that you like to do or whatever, right? Like
that's very different from what I'm doing is electing to learn about the things I kind of suck at.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a challenge in that, and I'm taking it on.
Yep.
I have to sew garb. I am not good at sewing.
No. But there's a difference between doing that because it's fun to try something new and doing it when it's being presented to you as something that you are going to need to reach a certain goal with, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can be bad at something and have a lot of fun doing it, but if you're doing badly at something, air quotes again, knowing full well that there's a way that's the correct way to do it and you're supposed to be getting there, that's different.
Right.
Well, that's why I think, like, the universal design for learning is such a, it's such a powerful framework because it gives learners autonomy on, mm-hmm. on what they're actually learning. I remember having this conversation. I mean, I've talked with Katie Novak and Andra Tisha Fitzgerald, a number of UDL, even Louis Lord Nelson, all these UDL experts. And what I've really, like, the big takeaway for me is that when you give learners ownership over their own learning, mm-hmm. they're not only more engaged and that they learn more, they're just motivated to keep going. Whereas it's like, this is what you have to learn. It's like what you're saying. It's like, now I'm going to spend more time doing the things that I'm not good at. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that is, it's so drilled into a child's head. It's like, okay, well, you're not good at math, so now you have to do extra math.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And there's a balance right there. There's a balance. But I think that for the most part, how I learned and how I grew up, it was, these are the things that you learn and you must learn mm-hmm. them before you go on to the next thing or whatever.
And that before you get to play, and leveraging that, like you can do this and then, right. But also how much time in the present do we lose the connection because we're thinking about what is needed in the future? Mm-hmm. Like even like the grade 3 teacher saying, next year you're going to be, well, in Canada it's intermediate. You're going to be in grade 4. You're going to need to do this for grade 4. Or how often do we look at what a 2-year-old is doing? And we maybe like play that forward and look at that, whatever that is, and see that's not how a 5-year-old would act, but it's perfectly typical for a 2-year-old. Or when we're talking about disability, that we take a child and we project who they are in this moment into their adulthood, which is ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
Like people develop, right? All people develop. Mm-hmm. All people grow. All people change. And looking at who someone is in the moment and only projecting that same identity into the future and then getting afraid about it or stressed about it or if I can't do this, but maybe it's really important to do. And maybe we should just relax into it and then.
Yeah. We're real close to time and we really could talk for longer. And normally I would, but I actually do have something.
He's got a play date.
Yeah, there you go.
Got a play date. Yeah. But let's wrap up. Actually, so normally I do like takeaways for educators. Like, I feel like this whole conversation was like super beneficial, like super beneficial, especially for educators. Like, so if you're listening and you're a teacher, I really think that there's a lot of really great takeaways here. And maybe I'll talk about that when I do my post, my outro, and kind of summarize some of those things that make me think. But what I want to do, because it kind of goes along with play, is I have our mystery question. And so if you've listened to the podcast for the last couple of years, I have a mystery question. It's just, I don't know what it is. I'm running out of them. They're very, I'm almost done with them. And
is play, just saying.
This is play.
Mm-hmm. In fact, we might have to write you some new mystery questions.
That's right. Well, I'm recruiting my 12-year-old to write them.
Awesome.
So once I run out, then she's in charge.
It looks like you have to open it.
Say what?
The mystery question. Is it hidden?
No, it's right here. I just have to.
Cards?
They're cards. I like mix them up, and then I take the top one, and then it is what? Here we go. What upcoming life event are you excited about? That is the question. What upcoming life event? I don't know what life event. I don't know how they define life event, but
right.
Well, it's up to us.
It is up to us. What? I also can go first if you'd like.
Bring it.
So we're recording this in February. My oldest daughter is in college, and she goes to college about 2 hours away. And we are going to see her next weekend. It's the first time she's been in college that we've gone down there to visit. Like we drove in the fall to drop her off, and we stayed the weekend, and then we left. And she's come home, but we have not gone there as a family to visit. So this is the first time we're going to do that.
That is
exciting. I'm really excited about that.
Nice.
Yeah.
That is nice.
All right. What about y'all?
Life event we're excited about.
So I guess I'm thinking because there's actually been a lot of stuff going on in my life the last, like, big changes, moving and all these sort of things. Yes. the last few months. So I'm kind of like, actually, my life event is not doing those things. The next 6 months, I'm just going to enjoy my place. However, I did have a big birthday just a few weeks ago, and I am looking forward to, when the weather is better, celebrating all those changes in, I find, like, inviting people to come check out all this newness in our little yard in the near future.
That's great. Yeah. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
All right.
I'm looking forward to attending that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming an invitation.
Yes.
You'd probably be invited too, but you might not want to come up to.
It might be a long trip. Yeah.
It would be longer than going to college.
Yeah.
Do you have more to add, or should I go? So, my big life event, I have a book talk coming up at our local library. Which
nice.
Is
pretty cool.
Yeah, I got a grant, and I'm doing a thing, book talk and signing. So, that's pretty cool. And I'm excited about this podcast. I think it's going to be great. Working title is the Pebble in the Shoe podcast, season one. Let's play. Season one.
Really confidently, so I was like, okay,
I was saying an 8-bit yesterday because my son used to have this toy that when you put it on, let's play. So I sounded both. I don't sound, but
we need to find that toy. We should actually have that as the
sound. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, you need to record that. You need to record it. Yes.
Let's play.
Yes. Yes.
Hello. Let's play. No, you don't have a goat on your podcast, but this is Leah doing it.
They're very playful.
Really good. This is really good. They had a whole game was called Goat Simulator. Did you ever play that?
Yes, my kids did that. Oh my gosh, I couldn't watch it.
I never played it. Nope.
The animation was like, it made me feel unhappy or like disturbed because it was like, it's just like, it was one of those like.
It was not great. Yeah.
It was not great. And it, like, it, yes.
Goat Simulator.
But they were crazy about it.
Yep.
So, okay. Big takeaway, listeners, keep your ears open for the Pebble in the Shoe.
Pebble in the Shoe. All right, let's do it.
It's going to be awesome.
It is
going to be awesome. Kari Gustafson. And Leah Kelly, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
It's a treat to talk with you.
Yes.
That's all the time we have for this episode of Think Inclusive. Now, let's roll the credits. Think Inclusive is brought to you by me, Tim Villegas. I handle the writing, editing, design, mixing, and mastering. This podcast is a proud production of the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education. Our original music is by Miles Kretich, with additional tunes by Melody. A big shout out to our sponsor, IXL. Check them out at IXL.com/inclusive. We truly appreciate each and every one of you who tunes in. One way to help us grow the show is by sharing an episode that you like with somebody that you know, a colleague, a friend, a family member, the principal at your child's school, the cashier at the coffee shop. Tell people about Think Inclusive and the show will grow. That's one of the best ways to get the word out. Another great way to help us is to give us a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and even, you know, write something, you know, in the Apple Podcast app. That is another way. So help us out. That would be great. We would love it. And you can always email me at tvagus@mcie.org. we respond to listener feedback. Thanks for your time and attention. And remember, inclusion always works.
From MCIE.